We want to spend some time now on something most of us do, and that's sweat. Many of us are embarrassed by any evidence that we perspire, and so we use various products to try to stop it. And advertisers make the most of that insecurity about our bodies. Just take a listen to this clip from a 1980s commercial for Sure antiperspirant.
Raise your hand.
You got it.
Raise your hand.
You know it. You feel confident, secure.
Raise your hand.
You feel dry now.
Raise your hand.
As science journalist Sarah Everts writes, the advertising world capitalizes on our fragile egos to sell deodorant. She's written a fascinating story for Smithsonian Magazine about the relatively young history of this product, and she joins us on the line. Sarah, I loved this article because it's a reminder that something we take for granted today, deodorant, wasn't always a daily part of life.
Yeah, who knew anti-sweat technology was not around over 100 years ago?
So, since most of us have never known life without deodorant, tell us what people used to do to try to keep from smelling bad before they had Speedstick or Right Guard or Secret or any of the other brands out there.
Sure. So for most of human history, people have done actually very little to rein in their rankness. I mean, if anything, they've washed periodically or they've tried to hide their odor by masking it with perfumes or strong fragrances. But deodorants and antiperspirants differ from these perfumes because they don't just try to cover human stink. They try to thwart its production in the first place.
And you write that when the first deodorants and antiperspirants did come on the scene in the late 1800s, they really weren't very popular. So why the resistance to a product meant to help fight off BO?
Well, we're dealing with a Victorian society. So, in effect, nobody talks about bodily fluids, let alone sweat. So how do you sell a product when you can't even talk about what it combats? And secondly, there is an inherent assumption in society at that time, or at least American society, that interfering with bodily functions, including sweating, was inherently unhealthy.
That you were supposed to sweat, and so you should let yourself sweat because to not do it might hurt your body somehow.
Exactly.
All right. So in the early 1900s, a young woman named Edna Murphy, who you write about, comes on the deodorant scene and she has a breakthrough. Would you tell us who she was and what she did?
She was a high school student and also the daughter of a Cincinnati surgeon. And he was worried about having his tool slip out of his hand in the operating room. And so he invented something that would stop sweating in his hands. And she got the bright idea to try putting this product, which she also later named Odor Oh No, into her armpits to see if it would stop sweating.
It was one word, Odor Oh No, short for Odor Oh No.
Exactly.
So she used it on armpits and it was effective.
Yeah, it was. So the other alternative at the time was to use dress shields, cotton or rubber pads that you put under your armpits in your shirt or dress.
All right, so Edna Murphy comes up with this alternative, but the product wasn't perfect. What were its problems?
First of all, like all antiperspirants of the time, and it's important to note that Odor Oh No was not the first antiperspirant. Everdry launched one in 1903, but you know, by the 1910s, when Edna Murphy comes up with her version, it's still not very popular. And all of these antiperspirants used aluminum chloride as their active ingredient, and at the time, in order to make it effective, it had to be suspended in acid, which was problematic because, first of all, it irritated sensitive armpit skin. Second of all, it actually ate through clothing. It really degraded fabric.
That is pretty problematic.
It is problematic. Third of all, their particular formulation was colored red. And in fact, early company files note a complaint from a woman who ruined her wedding dress that way. But, you know, the upside of this product was actually you only had to apply it every couple of days.
And eventually, of course, deodorants became mainstream and remain mainstream. And these
exactly.
things that had started as creams that you had to rub into your armpits started to have all these new developments in terms of delivery, like aerosols and so forth. What other developments in the product have there been?
In terms of the actual packaging and how you put it in, as you said, early products, you had to kind of stick it into your armpits. They took a long time to dry or be absorbed. They were kind of icky and gross and made your armpits kind of damp for a while. Later technologies included the roll-on, which was actually modeled after the ballpoint pen. Also, technologies for putting these active ingredients in quick-dry solvents so that as soon as you sprayed it into your armpit, it dried very quickly.
And are there any new deodorant technologies on the horizon that you know of?
Yes, there's actually many patents every year that come out trying to come up with new deodorant or antiperspirant technologies. So, for example, instead of blocking the smelly smells, there's been a patent for a deodorant to put competing smells that kind of fool your nose to not smelling the stink of other people is one, for example.
Sarah, I understand that you studied the science of sweat last year. And I'm kind of afraid to ask this, but what kind of research does that involve?
Well, I kind of find sweat pretty fascinating. On the one hand, it's something we're all sort of embarrassed by, so much so that we wear deodorants almost on a daily basis, at least in Western societies. But, you know, at the same time, this is something that makes us inherently human. Everybody sweats to control our temperature, and, you know, most other mammals don't use sweat as a way to do so. Furthermore, despite the fact that we're kind of embarrassed about sweating, we also, you know, join gyms to break a sweat. Most cultures have some form of sweating ceremony. I'm thinking in North America, the Native Americans have sweat lodges. In Russia, it's the banya. In Middle East countries, it's the hammam. In Korea, it's the jimjilbang. So on the one hand, we try and block sweating. On the other hand, we try and start it at the same time. And I've been studying sort of this odd dichotomy.
What was the most interesting thing you came across in researching and writing about deodorants and sweat?
Oh, God. What wasn't interesting? but I guess what was really fascinating to me was that even ancient Egyptians had perfumes that were specifically focused on covering the stink of humans. For example, they had one concoction that was made of ostrich eggs, tortoise shells, and gallnuts. And even Catholic priests in the 16th century avidly encouraged the burning of incense in churches to counteract the stench of worshipers during that era. So, you know, it's something that humans have often thought about, but until 100 years ago, there was no product to actively block sweating or block the production of stink, which comes from bacteria.
You know, one as an aside, there continues to be some debate over whether deodorants are actually unhealthy for us, as the Victorians thought. Did you look into that?
Yeah, I have looked into it a little bit. One of the biggest fears that people have is that the active ingredient of antiperspirants, which is usually aluminum-based salts, can perhaps cause Alzheimer's disease. And that fear came out in the 60s and the 70s. And in effect, the FDA, which actually regulates antiperspirants, has said that that's a myth, as has the American Alzheimer's Association, a patient advocacy group.
And have there been concerns about breast cancer links?
There have been, but those studies have, as far as I can tell, not had a lot of good controls in them.
Sarah Everts wrote an article in the most recent issue of the Smithsonian titled How Advertisers Convinced Americans They Smelled Bad. Sarah, thanks a lot for talking with us.
It's been a pleasure.